Welcome to the AI experience from basics to breakthroughs. I'm Sirte Pihlaja, your host, the CEO at Shirute and the CXP Finland head of team. In this series, we explore how artificial intelligence is reshaping customer and employee experiences, addressing the innovations, ethical questions, and strategies essential for navigating the world of artificial intelligence. Join us for this episode, and don't forget to subscribe to follow us on your favorite platform. In today's episode of the AI Experience podcast, we explore how artificial intelligence and digital tools can elevate the human side of service. Alec Dalton, an expert in hospitality, customer experience, and leadership, joins us to discuss enhancing emotional intelligence, designing meaningful experiences, and preserving human connection in high-touch industries. We dive into making systems empathetic and why humane intelligence is essential to digital transformation. Today's guest, Alec Dalton, Executive Director at Accelerating Leaders and a certified customer experience professional. With a rich background at iconic brands like Disney and Ritz-Carlton, Alec blends hospitality with the science of service designed to help organizations build emotionally intelligent cultures. He's a global voice in CX and EX, passionate about using AI and digital tools to elevate, not replace, human connection. Alec joins us to explore how humane intelligence can power truly memorable experiences in a digital age. Welcome to the show, Alec.
Thank you, Sirte. I'm so glad to be here.
It's such a treat to have you here again. I mean, this time on the mic instead of the stage. It was an absolute joy to host you here in Finland recently for your keynote and workshop. And I'm thrilled to continue the conversation today as we dive into how AI can help us design experiences that feel just as warm, thoughtful, and human.
Exactly. Oh, it was a delight to be with you and our colleagues all across Finland. And while I'm not there at the moment, I certainly bring the Nordic spirit with me and send greetings from New York.
Good. I'm happy that you have fond memories of our happiest country on earth.
I still have the smile on my face.
I can see that. First off, can you tell us about your journey into CX and AI and what led you to your current role?
Certainly. So my career began working in hotels, whether it be as a housekeeping supervisor, a front desk agent, a concierge. I operated 5 luxury hotels up and down the East Coast of the United States from Boston to Orlando. As you noted, spent some time with Disney at Walt Disney World Resort in Orlando, Florida. Transitioned to the Ritz-Carlton for several years, including some management positions in properties around Washington, D.C., and then transitioned from there into the corporate world, working first in customer relationship management and then in global quality for all of Marriott's 30 brands and about 7,500 hotels around the world. The way I think about the journey into CX is that I'd always been in CX, even though I didn't necessarily realize it was called CX. And that's one of the things that I try and do in my role now as an advisor to organizations, especially focusing in the hospitality industry, is recognizing the fact that hospitality, in principle, at least philosophically, is great customer experience. And vice versa, great customer experiences across any industry should embed that spirit of hospitality, warmth, welcoming, empathy, and all of the things we're going to talk about throughout our presentation today. And so to that point, today, I work with organizations large and small, brand name and boutique, both for-profit as well as nonprofits, even government ministries, tourism, culture, education, et cetera, to help elevate service standards, develop talent and capacity, and create just a dynamic spirit of hospitality all around the world.
What would you say excites you most about working with AI in the specific context of hospitality?
One of my favorite roles is serving in kind of a professorial capacity with a couple of universities. I love the connection point between knowledge being generated in academia and its application in the industry. But more broadly, I just love the idea of knowledge as an empowering tool for us all. And that's what most excites me about AI. As we think about organizational knowledge, the total knowledge within a single company, as we think about the world of knowledge from every corner of the globe, these systems can empower frontline staff. They can empower customers with so much knowledge and information at their fingertips to make better informed, smarter, more satisfying decisions. And again, that's what really excites me about artificial intelligence.
You've also spoken about this science of service. How can artificial intelligence and digital tools be used to operationalize empathy and emotional intelligence in CX and EX?
Well, from a psychological standpoint, there is so much science behind service. I like to say that I try and figure out the science behind smiles or the method behind the magic, to use a Disney parlance. And as we think about artificial intelligence, especially consumer-facing artificial intelligence, I think it's really important to keep that in mind because our guests, our customers, our patients, whomever we're serving, are expecting that service, whether it be provided by a human or by a robot. The degree of forgiveness that a customer has, the degree of accommodation that a customer has in working with a service professional or an agentic system is not only a somewhat negligible difference, but I would argue, and research is increasingly showing, that customers have less tolerance for artificial systems. I think in two distinct ways, at least in the current state. One of those is because customers recognize that companies may be investing in technologies for the sake of efficiencies and cost savings, and might, at a kind of a philosophical level, have some difference in opinion about how that might be affecting society. But there's another component too, where customers expect great service, increasingly great service, as service levels improve around the world. And they carry that same predisposition when they're thinking about and interacting with technology. One of the exciting things that's happening right now is we're seeing wave after wave of emerging technologies in the AI space, is that the Turing test is increasingly passed time and time again. That noticeable difference between a person and a bot is getting so blurred, and that's what excites me all the more about this space, is that we're getting it right more and more often. Don't you find, as like you've been working with technology providers, as you've been working with end users or the intermediary users, that it's feeling more human?
Definitely so, and there's all these new. I mean, we used to have these old, let's call them traditional chatbots, where you would have everything scripted down to
Exactly.
the first and last line of context there. But I think that today's AI conversational sales is totally different from what it used to be. But
Exactly.
people are still, when they see like a chatbot, they think that, okay, nah, I'm not gonna touch that. That's the worst day in my day. So it's
Exactly. And I
something.
think, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I think that kind of goes back to the point that I was making earlier, in the sense that it's not like magically overnight technology emerged that customers have started interacting with. They've been touching technology for time immemorial, and at least digital technology since the internet first began. But in at least the past decade or so, we've all interacted with decision trees and scripted dialogue, something that might be called AI, but really isn't. It's just kind of a prompt tree, or the dreaded, talk to an agent when we're on a phone line. But now we're at that point where it truly is conversational. And we've got to get over a psychological hurdle on the part of many customers, help them to recognize that, oh, this is a different tool. This is a different system solution, a different service entirely than one that may have been burdensome in the past.
And certainly we need to start thinking soon that this is not necessarily something that we'll always have, that we are even visiting those websites or mobile site services, because people will be using their own agents, AI agents, to do all the shopping and this for them. So
Exactly.
I really think that there's a whole, what do you call it, like a thinking process, and you need to rethink your business models, even your how you're marketing things to your customers, because those customers might be machines.
Exactly. And that gets to the heart of one of the challenges that I think organizations need to think about, is how do you appeal to both humans and machines? As we think about the design of websites, as we think about even social media or public relations and earned owned media, paid media? How can we create traces in bytes of information that a machine can easily ingest, permute, and reinterpret? How can we also make sure that's still appealing to humans? It's almost like we have two parallel worlds that need to be in play. But it's important to think about that because, to your point, increasingly machines are the consumers, and they can in turn help the actual human end user to engage with something better, faster, cheaper, stronger.
What do you think people are getting wrong about implementing AI at the moment, especially since it's such a high-touch human experience?
I think one of the biggest tripping points is the temptation of loading in, let's say, policies or procedures, training a system on an organization's dynamics and saying, all right, we've put in, our handbook, we've put in all of our rules, and we're just going to let it sit and run. I think that poses an issue of inconsistency where the system might start to learn alternatives without proper training and coaching. Along those lines, I recommend that we think in terms of both guidelines and guardrails. What are kind of the must-dos, the guidelines, and what are the guardrails? What are the don't-dos? But I think another core component here is also making sure that responses to inquiries are also empathetically toned, that they're not so structured and scripted, going back kind of to what we were talking about earlier, that if an AI is aware of a policy, it doesn't simply repeat back the policy verbatim, but it does so within the context and with a degree of empathy in its tone as it relates to the customer and what the customer is inquiring about. If the customer is, for example, let's talk about retail, if they're reporting that a package is missing, the AI could say, well, you must wait 48 hours, and if the package hasn't arrived, knock on your neighbor's doors, and then reach us out to us after 72 hours. Or it could say, I'm terribly sorry to hear that you haven't yet received your package. We want to make sure that you do, and then walk through the steps on remediation. That balancing act is so key.
That's so funny because we've been discussing about this how empathy in a role of even CSRs, customer service representatives, is something that some people need to be taught. So if you think of an AI service kind of customer service bot or something, that they are coming into that space with as little knowledge about human kind of way of talking about things and human empathy and all of that. So we should teach them emotional intelligence related values as well.
Exactly. One of the things that excites me, kind of thinking old world versus new world, is the fact that in days gone by, part of the reason why there were those concerns with customer care where it didn't always feel empathetic, I think there were two main drivers behind that. One was the fact that that's a highly emotional job as a recipient on the end line of emails, a mass inbox texts, or certainly voice calls. You tend to be fielding often a lot of negative emotion, some caused by the organization of its policies, sometimes caused by the customer themselves and a lack of awareness or misuse or abuse of the program. But in any case, you're still kind of on the receiving end of things you didn't do or cause and still get that emotion projected. And so that creates a lot of burnout. And there's a lot of research into the turnover and the burnout and its effects in customer care roles. But another component too is the fact that many organizations incentivized short call times. I think in large part because of the fact that we're talking about human labor costs here. And the shorter your call, the more calls you can take, the more customers you can pass through in the same amount of time. It's an efficiency factor. As we think about AI, we can't say it's infinitely scalable, and there's certainly costs associated with artificial intelligence applications, whether they be energy costs, whether they be subscriptions or use case costs. But I think at least removing some of that transference of negative emotion and reducing that incentive to keep contact short is helpful towards creating an environment where systems are, I don't want to say, better prepared, I don't think that gives credit to the humans who have worked in those really important roles, but I think more empowered or allowed to deliver the type of service that a customer would actually expect.
Certainly, certainly. Shifting gears here, you recently spent time with Finnish service professionals in the hospitality industry specifically. How do you think the Nordic approaches to empathy and design thinking and all of this could influence the global AI conversation?
Well, there are two components that come immediately to mind, and one we already joked about earlier, but it's the fact that Finland is the happiest country on earth. And that's certainly something that I felt firsthand across virtually every touch point around the country. And that spirit of warmth and welcoming that I don't want to say a perpetual smile on the face. It didn't feel fake or involuntary, but it felt genuine. And I think understanding where that comes from culturally and being able to expand that elsewhere around the world is something that could be really valuable to many other places. Another key component, though, as I think about beyond the personal interaction, Nordic design in general, it's sleek, it's consistent, there's a clean aesthetic to it, but at the same time, it's uncluttered. And it gets to the point. And there are so many parallels I think of in a CX world, and especially when it comes to artificial intelligence, where that same theory can apply. You know, responses should be relatively concise. Nobody wants to read a five-paragraph essay when they ask a simple question of a bot. There should be consistency in the response from one guest to another in terms of the information that's being provided, but it should also be contextual, which is, I think, another key part of Nordic design. It speaks to the resources of the place. It speaks to the environment around us, and that context is also really important. Again, if we're contacting an agent to book a hotel reservation, let's say, and we ask, use the word stay, for example, in conversation. Well, the word stay has at least eight different definitions as a verb, never mind when we get into nouns. And so a system needs to be able to understand and kind of engage in that natural language, natural processing language, in order to properly interpret what the guest is looking for. And that goes back into context.
Yeah, well, you certainly passed the test about the Finnish
Yeah.
happiness.
Whew.
Thank you. Ooh. You have worked with some of the most iconic service brands in the world. What lessons from Disney and the Ritz-Carlton do you think that the tech and the AI world needs to learn most urgently?
I think, well, actually, it goes back to natural language processing. A really important part is not just understanding what words mean and how they're used in a particular context in order to understand what an inquiry's objective is and what the system needs to respond to, but it's also thinking what the tone of that response ought to be. And I think about it in two different ways. One of those ways is a broadly hospitable approach. And there's a framework that was developed almost 40 years ago by Zeith Ammal Parasuraman and Barry called ServQual. And we use the acronym RATER to represent it. It stands for reliability, assurance, tangibles, empathy, and responsiveness. When we're in any service context as humans and engaging in that service, those are the five key things that we're looking for when we're evaluating after the fact. Is it acceptable service, great service, memorable service, exceptional service, terrible service? I think we need to make sure that the responses and the engagement of systems demonstrate those qualities. That's one bucket. The other thing that I think systems need to do is also reflect the tone of the brand. We, for a long time in the branding space, talked about the idea of brand voice, that there are certain colors and fonts and iconography, verbiage that bring a brand to life. And artificial intelligence creates this great opportunity to truly bring a voice, in some cases an actual voice, a sound-based voice, in others at least a hypertextual voice to a brand, making that an clear. Take Ritz-Carlton, for example, versus say Moxy Hotels. Ritz-Carlton is known as being relatively refined and elevated. It serves a luxury clientele, high net worth guests. Moxy is geared towards millennial and Gen Z travelers. It's a notch above a hostel. It's meant to be trendy and funky and cool. You check in at the bar instead of at a desk. If we were talking with an AI agent at Moxy and they were to say, "Good afternoon, sir. I'm delighted to be assisting you. My name is Chatbot Ted. How may I be of a service today?" That's going to feel quite stiff. And that might turn off the Moxy guest. That's not going to feel authentic. Vice
True.
versa, that might sound appropriate and welcome for a Ritz-Carlton guest who's engaging with those systems. So making sure that tone is carried through that reflects the brand authentically, make sure that hospitality is carried through are two key aspects of that empathetic relationship building.
Some of your research is talking about the robots and robotic workforce in the hospitality industry. Can you maybe elaborate a little bit on that?
Absolutely. There have been tons of evolutions in robotics in this space. Years ago, almost at this point, 15 years ago, Hilton experimented with a robotic concierge named Connie, stood on the desk of a hotel, and anecdotally, the story goes that it was working quite well for a couple of weeks until it sent one guest who was looking for a great dinner, sent them to a house of ill repute. It didn't know any better, but that was somehow how it permuted the information available on the internet. That work was subsequently suspended for some time. On the flip side, we have companies like Hotel Henna. They're predominantly based in Japan, although there's one right down the street from me here in New York right now. You can check in with a dinosaur.
I was going to ask, was that the one with the dinosaur that you
It is,
mentioned
it is.
earlier?
Yeah. Now, here in New York, there is a Tyrannosaurus Rex in the lobby, but you actually check in with a human being. In some of the Japanese properties, I hope you get to experience this in your upcoming trip. You can check in with a dinosaur. They have a kind of a truly android-looking robot. There is also a humanoid robot that they've experimented with. It looks like a person. That created some interesting dynamics, and that's one of the tricky things about robotics. There is very much more of an uncanny valley factor when we have a physical representation of a human that is clearly not a human. And I have faith in technology that one day we will create a truly humanoid object that doesn't freak people out. But it's the little things, it's the way that the wrinkles around the eye move as emotions adjust. It's the way that a smile turns up or down or becomes a frown in conversation. And it kind of goes back to even a little bit about what we were talking about with the chat functions or with voice functions earlier. Customers are really good about knowing when they're talking to a human and when they're talking to a machine. And there's a creepiness factor and an uncomfortability factor, and sometimes a lack of forgiveness, rightfully or wrongfully, on the customer's part when they're dealing with a machine, because it's we don't really know as a species, I think, evolutionarily, how to work with that right now. We're still figuring that out. My advice when it comes to robotics, at least right now, given the state of the technology, is to kind of do what Hannah did in the first two cases, make it something completely oddball, like a dinosaur, or make it a robot. Like, if it's a robot, make it look like a robot. We're not yet at the point where I think the average person in society is comfortable working with an android with skin. That day will come, hopefully soon, and hopefully in a cool way. But
Yeah,
we're not there yet.
I'm also thinking as we're visiting Japan soon, there's something called the robot cafe or something like this. And the idea there is that you have actual people behind those robots. They are certain, like some kind of avatars for people who have issues with mobility and they're actually bedridden at the moment. So for them to be able to be part of the society, they have created this very very much societal experience, let's say, that they get to move around with the robot as their avatar, and then they can have all these discussions with tourists mainly, I guess, but still with other people. And I think I can't stop thinking that that must be really kind of helpful for them that they can still continue with their lives even though they can't be there in person. They might be, on Hokkaido or somewhere totally at the other far end of Japan, and then have these live conversations with customers, live customers. So I think that's a
Exactly.
really great experiment as
To
well.
a certain extent, the robotic technology, whether it be on premises or virtual like that, offers another degree of prosthesis. And I think we're able to include so many more people in the various aspects of society, but certainly within the hospitality industry, we can connect people even better than ever before. A good example of this from across the Atlantic, I believe it was Chick-fil-A, that was experimenting, and it seemed to be quite successful with having virtual order takers at drive-through kiosks. It wasn't just having their sound, though. Like, you could actually see the person and interact with a real human being that just wasn't there on site. There were tons of benefits, but one of those being that those who traditionally where the industry made it difficult for a person to work there because of the physical requirements of the industry, now we're able to bypass those through the supportive technology, and we can again create a better workspaces, work environment, working conditions to accommodate all.
If we come back to AI, do you see AI as an enhancer of human service rather than a replacement? I mean, can AI ever replicate the, let's say, magic moments that guests experience at places like Disney or luxury hotels? Or is it more, does it more have like a much more of a role in enabling those moments behind the scenes? Which one would you rather say is their place on this earth?
Yeah, at this stage, I lean more towards the second part of your hypothesis there, that it's an enhancer. We often talk in my team and with our clientele about the fact that hospitality ultimately occurs kind of in the last square meter, in that space between the guest and the professional who's taking care of them. In some cases, of course, that's over the phone or by chat, especially when we're making bookings, making inquiries, or trying to resolve challenges. But so much of hospitality happens in a physical space. When we're in a restaurant, for example, and an order of food gets presented and hopefully creates a wow moment, the sizzling fajitas or a fizzy drink with a splash of smoke. If we're in a hotel, it's having a nice amenity placed in the room to welcome a guest. Until robots get so sophisticated that they can deliver those capably without that uncanny valley factor, I don't see this artificial technology outright replacing people. Are there back office functions where I think technology can do a better job, more seamless job, play a more empathetic role? Probably, and I think that's already happening, as we already talked about, especially in the case of certain chat functions, certain voice functions, where AI can be, it just possesses access to greater degrees of knowledge. We don't have to worry about human memory, human language processing. As much as we talk about natural language processing in an artificial intelligence space, we flub up our words too as human beings. So sometimes the technology can be a little bit more seamless, more consistent, more concise. But one other piece that I generally advise organizations is if you're going to use technology, especially artificial technology, to engage with customer, consider having an intermediary. So perhaps, let's say we're in a call center in a hotel, fielding inquiries, reservation sales, to customer support of any kind. Perhaps the AI can help in generating rapid responses, but perhaps there's a human who says approved or not, at least for the time being, while we're in testing phases with new implementations and upgrades and things like that. That way, we make sure that at the very least, we're not disappointing the customer, disobeying our own policies, procedures, those guidelines and guardrails, and in the process, making sure that we're delivering hospitality too along the way.
If we think a little bit about the challenges, training these stakeholders, in terms of EX, how would you say that AI could be used to elevate these frontline employees' experiences and, decision making? especially if we're talking about emotionally demanding roles.
One thing that I think is worthwhile for organizations to consider is figuring out how best to introduce, in some cases, support, enable their teams with that operational technology. What I often find, including with some of my own clients or with other organizations I've advised in the past, is there's a tendency to do an all or nothing approach and say either here, have free rein over technology, use whatever you need to get service done. And I think that's where the inconsistency oftentimes comes into play. At the same time, there are organizations where there's resistance or abject kind of I want to say denial of the technology, but they're kind of clear guardrails, like we don't use it, we're not going to use it. And I think that candidly is a bit short-sighted, and isn't taking advantage of the great resources that are available through AI. So I think it's about figuring out as an organization what systems will we want to introduce into the organization. How do we want to introduce AI as an enhancer to our service professionals from a change management standpoint, so that they see the benefits of it without feeling at risk because of it? How can we make sure those systems are properly trained in the culture, the language, the values, the principles, the priorities, the processes and policies of the organization? And then how can we, in general, just like we have data security training, just like we have privacy training, in hotels, we have sexual harassment training, human trafficking training. We also need to have AI training. How do we make sure that we're using these systems responsibly in order to accomplish all of those other hygienic factors too? So those are some pieces of advice that I have for organizations.
Yeah, in the EU, the EU AI Act actually makes it obligatory for companies to give some kind of AI literacy training for their employees so that they get at least to some level of understanding of how they could use AI in their business and in their everyday work lives. And I think that that's a really good way of making sure that everybody gets on board with artificial intelligence.
Exactly. I think one of the things that people find scary about it is it's AI or artificial intelligence, even verbally, are such abstract terms. And increasingly, I think because of their popular appeal right now, they become buzzwords that are almost to an extent kind of losing their literal meaning. I feel like every company is talking about, oh, we've got this really cool AI. And I was like, well, you just have software. Like
True.
not every software is AI. And or has AI or needs AI. And at the same time, there's lots of conversation, obviously, about the social woes. And it's not to dismiss them. There are certainly challenges that we as society, across societies around the world, have to grapple with as we figure out what's the proper integration of this ethically, morally, philosophically, empathetically. But rather than ignore it or hide it or restrict it, or on the opposite end of the spectrum, open the floodgates and say, like, have at it, free for all. I think it's helpful for organizations to provide that level of guidance and guardrails to their own professionals, in
Yeah.
addition to the systems.
And it's also a fact that if you don't give your employees some kind of tools and training for AI, there will be something called shadow AI, which is then
Exactly.
working against you in a way that it will happen anyhow, whether you want it or not. So
Precisely.
it's better to be there and create some kind of AI governance model, even a light touch one, but somehow within your organization, create some kind of AI council or whatever you want to call it, but people who are a little bit in the know in the AI space and help others to onboard AI systems for different kinds of use cases. Because we've done all of these workshops with our clients where people started like not knowing almost anything about AI, or on the other hand, we might have some that were really, really enthusiastic and they just didn't know how to get move forward with that. And then, ideating use cases with them, and you see how their eyes brighten and how they get really enthusiastic about it when they get to, I don't know, create their own digital twins, or we create some kind of, AI, like product AI for them, talking products that actually take the lead in trying to give another way for customers to interact with the company. And when
Exactly,
you
exactly.
get that, practical hands-on experience yourself of your, for instance, for your own digital twin, I have, by the way, my own on Sieltä.fi if you want to visit and talk with her. She's
She's
not quite
fun. She, not
she
not not you, but she's very smart.
Yeah, well, she has some of my knowledge in machine customers and AI, not entirely download of my brain, so you might want to consider, and if she talks something weird, then it's not me. But
It's not
anyhow, I
AI.
think that but having those like practical ways of trying out these things yourself in real life and with no constraints from your organization that what kind of information are you allowed into putting into this because it's, some kind of business secret or whatever. I think it's a very good way of getting hands-on experience about AI and then starting that process of creating these things for your
Exactly.
customers and employees alike.
Well, and as you're speaking clear about that shadow function, I think of research that was done by MIT over the last decade and beyond about what they term the hidden factory. And it was the idea, even preceding AI, that, and when we talk about employees, we're talking about people. And people are smart. People find a way to do things better, cheaper, faster, less risky, less harmful, less burdensome. For the sake of the organization, for the sake of their peers, for the sake of themselves. And it's true in every organization that each individual operator is going to find their own way to get work done. I don't want to say regardless of the policies and procedures of the organization, but certainly with only some degree of deference to them, and that degree varies person to person. But that becomes all the more evident in the world of AI, where there are so many tools available and so many ways to use those tools. And I think that's where it is important for organizations, rather than to shy away and say, well, we're not going to touch it, people
And
will find a way to use it.
it's all about convenience. I mean, if you are able to give some of your tasks, that's one of the things that keeps coming back from those ideation workshops is that how do I get all of my work basically done by an AI agent that then acts as myself. So it's definitely there that we identify those things where we don't want to keep like spending our days so that we could rather put that for an AI agent to do or some kind of representative of ourselves. And then we could actually take that time and create better customer experiences. Like I always say, I hate when people say that, hey, let's make this more like productive and let's start selling more, but rather we should think that can we somehow use that time to create better customer and employee experiences, and then there comes the sales and all of these like financial figures. They are bound to come if you do it right.
Precisely. And as I think about the hospitality industry too, in recent trends, that's been the overtone across the industry too. Like we said, it's AI is certainly not at a stage now where it can be an abject replacement for humans. So instead, how can it be an enhancer? And I think of the classic front desk agent role or clerk role in a hotel. Already we're seeing organizations, and it's been happening even before AI, but now increasingly so, refer instead to those staff members as guest experience agents or guest experience coordinators, or the language, the nature of the role changes as it becomes less about assigning rooms, managing the guest folio and the register of the house, and more about how do we introduce the guest to the amenities of our property and to the attractions in the vicinity of the hotel? How do we help them craft an itinerary based on whatever is bringing them to the space or helping them get to their next destination? How can we make sure that if they have any concerns along the way, if there are any bumps in the road, that we're able to dedicate the time and the mental bandwidth and energy towards truly helping the guests have a great experience instead of being tied to, emailing copies of receipts or, playing Tetris with which room is available when?
Can you maybe share with us an example where digital or AI-enabled solutions have significantly enhanced the customer journey in a way that, I don't know, felt maybe more human, not less so because there was technology involved?
Well, I don't know if this example is going to hit the mark on more human, but one of the the most emotionally satisfying examples I've seen so far came from Disney. In the parks around the world, guests have an opportunity to interact with characters. And I'm not going to spoil the magic and tell you who the characters actually are, you know, but as you're talking with Mickey Mouse or Elsa from Frozen, you get to meet the characters in so many ways. But characters like Mickey or Minnie Mouse or Buzz Lightyear for so long were almost imprisoned in these. I'm going to assume we're talking to adults here on this podcast. So we're talking about people in costumes. Spoiler alert, right? But those costumes didn't move. They didn't have facial expression. Mickey's eyes were always wide open. His mouth was always ajar, and he never talked. All he could do was basically use high-level sign language with his gloves and sign autograph books, take a picture, and call it a day. Now, not only have robotic enhancements allowed for eye and mouth movement, but with AI, we can also have highly personalized audio dialogue. So Disney has already not only experimented with, but introduced Mickey Mouses in certain destinations that talk to the guest with their name about attractions they just went on or were going to, about meals that they had experienced. Like, and seeing a young child engage with a character that they admire is one thing. Seeing a parent see their child interact and create that magical moment is an entirely different level of emotional satisfaction. It's one of those moments where, mindful that the average guest spends 7 years to save up for a Disney vacation, they're spending thousands of dollars to take their family. In those moments, the price tag evaporates, and you can see the, ah, this was so worth it look
Yeah,
on their faces.
I can
And
imagine that.
yeah, and not every organization has characters, right? Not every organization is going to be deploying a mascot throughout the lobby or through the store, but it's about thinking about, how can this technology help us learn about our customers at a deeper level and take what we've learned to provide more tailored service along the way? I think about it in the case of a restaurant. Restaurants for time immemorial have been trying to upsell different dishes, whether it be specials or premium bottles of wine or particular items on the menu. And now we have more data than ever about what our customers like. If a customer has a trend, a pattern of purchasing a bottle of red wine with every meal, that should be an instant cue to the service professional to say, all right, I've got this great new bottle that I'd love to introduce to this customer and help them explore something that maybe they haven't tried yet. Or maybe we see that they love the same bottle, they purchase the same one over and over again. Let's bring that bottle by default and say, we're so glad to have you back. I know that you always love this wine. I have it ready for you now if you'd like me to open it, but of course, don't let me pressure you. And that level of personalization, I think, is really all of the humanity in it is as a guest feeling seen, feeling
That's for sure.
appreciated,
Yeah,
you
that's the
know.
four. That's some of the, let's not say maybe best experiences, but the most memorable experiences that I've had is when I went to this restaurant in Helsinki, and I had this long discussion about a specific wine with the sommelier there, or actually it was the owner of the restaurant, and then I went to the same restaurant like 5 6 years later. And he still remembered me as the person who he had had that conversation with. And it was
Exactly.
like totally unprompted. I didn't tell him anything. He just started to discuss this with me. So that level of hyper-personalization, if you can do it, well, there are some people who have this like photographic memory or whatever you want to call it that can actually have the CRM in their heads. But you need to, for us less capable in that, maybe some kind of AI could help in that hyper-personalization of the experiences in a way
Exactly.
that really makes you kind of remember those as unforgettable moments.
I went to the dry cleaner as soon as I got back from my trip to pick up some clothes and drop some new suits off. And I handed a, you know, 3-piece suit and 2 jackets. And typically, the clerk at the counter will ask for my phone number to look me up in the system and process everything. But instead, the owner of the store, Mr. Kim, he said he took the items, he punched it into the system, and he handed me back my collection receipt. And I looked at him for a second, and I looked down at my receipt and saw my name on it. And I said, "Mr. Kim, I know that you know my name, but how did you know my phone number?" He's like, "Oh, I remember it. I memorized it."
I reckon, yeah.
And that was like that was one of the most flattering experiences I've had in a long time. Like I go in there once a month, and I usually do work with another clerk. He's oftentimes to the side or working on something else. And so to feel seen like that was that made my day. And now I'm talking about it on a podcast. I think of there are at least three doormen that I've worked with throughout my career in hotels who had photographic memories, and they would remember guests that they might not have seen for 10 years. They knew them by name on site instantly. They'd know them by the back of their heads in some cases. And it's enormously impressive that human memory can do that. But it's, I think, all the more, again, flattering to a guest to feel seen and recognized and heard. And that's one of the other parts of technology we haven't talked about yet, but a face recognition and identity recognition is increasingly, I think, going to be a gateway for that personalization. When even if the person that the service professional doesn't recognize who you are, if integrated systems can flash on the screen, you're talking to Mr. Dalton in room 637, it there's a whole different level of magic that happens when you can immediately say, "Mr. Dalton, it's good to see you again. How may I help you?" Versus being asked at a hotel, "What's your room number?" And I'm excited for that future.
Usually when you go to hotels, it's firstly it's like it's always about numbers. It's like what's your credit card number? What's your when you come to the reception desk, then afterwards when you come to the breakfast room, it's like what's your room number? And again, and it's always about this number. So if you could be something more to them than a number, even if it's AI assisted, I would just love to see that. But
Exactly.
hey, we are coming towards the end of this show, so I still want to ask you about a question about the looking ahead towards the future. So how do you foresee the evolution of AI in hospitality and travel over the next few years, say 3 to 5 years? I know it's a stretch for anyone if we're talking AI, but maybe we should say months, but still.
Who knows what's going to happen tomorrow? But along those lines, I think that personalization component is going to be really key. I think we're going to see it increasingly come through with visualization technologies that identify a guest. I think it's going to help service professionals not only deliver that more prepared and empowered and informed service, but also it's going to create better work environments too for team members. What am I Name recognition has always been really important in luxury hotels, for example. In all five of the hotels I worked in, I had an earpiece and a radio hidden behind my jacket. And as a guest would arrive at the front door, it was the doorman's responsibility to essentially start this chain reaction of passing the baton from the doorman to the bellman to a greeter in the lobby to the front desk agent saying, "Mr. Smith is approaching you," or "Miss Pelaya is approaching you." And, that earpiece gets really annoying really fast. It's not comfortable. And when you're trying to talk to somebody and you have a radio in your ear, that's it's disorienting. And
Even these
technology is soon able to take away that the past burdens of technology become the opportunities of future technologies. So there's one. I think about even after a stay has happened, when we're talking about guest feedback, we can use AI to interpret sentiment in social reviews, in survey responses. To a certain extent, we can even bypass surveying. I think the more we can capture a guest while they're with us in-house, while they're in the restaurant, while they're in the store to make sure they're satisfied, before they leave, the more opportunity we have to win them back over, because there are only so many cards we have left in the deck once they're already out of the building. And that's where, again, it kind of comes into a balancing act between that visual technology, between sentiment, related technology. All of this to say, organizations need to think about how we orchestrate this with integrated information systems, how we link our CRM to these artificial systems, how we link any revenue generating or sales oriented systems, how we link operating systems, point of sale systems, and hotels property management systems. That's where I think, if I think about the next couple of years, I feel like that's where a lot of the attention's going to be. There've been a lot of focuses on the threads, the application specific technologies that solve particular components in a guest experience and a supply chain and an overall business's operation. Now, how do we bring it together in an orchestrated system? And that's where I'm going to put my money. What do you think? If you play your crystal ball, what's coming?
Don't let me start it with my AI agents and machine customers. I mean, I started talking about them 5 years ago, and now I see like plop, 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 plop. Every single big
Everywhere,
brand
yeah.
is everywhere. So if I had the crystal ball, but I guess I had it back then because I was talking about these things already then, and now I'm finally seeing that my vision come true in real life. I think that it's going to be more even hyper personalized in that sense. I really put in my bets on that part of the game. I think there is a place for also robotics. Don't know for sure yet how that's going to play out. I understand there's Nvidia who's saying that, like, how I don't know, there's like tens of thousands and hundreds and thousands of these AI agents that are going to be physical AI enhanced. So that is a little bit scary at the same time, I guess. But we'll see. We'll see. Those are definitely some of those things. But at the same time, I think that what I want to see, I don't know if it's going to happen, is to get more of this humane intelligence, as you really nicely put it, that artificial intelligence really becomes human-centric, and we don't lose that part of ourselves, whatever we do with technology.
Exactly. And I think that's the core of every conversation about AI should entail in at least some form, where do we leave room for humanity? And I don't even know if that's a fair question. Perhaps how do we prioritize humanity is a better question. Because the last thing we need is a world where it's just robots talking to robots all day, every day, and we're left to the sidelines, twiddling our thumbs, wondering like, what do we do? Like, I can't imagine a world in which we're all just on vacation all the time. As lovely as that would be, I just don't know what economic model would support that. So instead, how can we make sure that we have places in society where people can find meaning and purpose through fulfilling an important and value-adding work? But also, how do we make sure that that technology is also supporting the experience of the end user, wherever in the chain that end user, that human user comes?
Lovely. I think that rounds up very well the
Yeah, good
discussion
food for
we've had.
thought.
We've had. Last question. Where can the members of our audience learn more about your work or connect with you if they have more questions coming up after having listened to us?
Great question. I always love engaging with colleagues, whether it's about artificial intelligence, whether it's about hospitality. You're welcome to connect with me on LinkedIn. You can simply search Alec Dalton there. You're also welcome to explore the work that my team is doing at www.acceleratingleaders.com. And we look forward to continuing the conversation in some way, shape, or form.
Very good. We'll make sure to put them down there, the links, so that people can follow those. That brings us to the end of today's episode. Alec, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your wisdom on designing these emotionally intelligent, human-centered experiences with AI. Your
Oh, kiitos,
insights,
Pekka. Always a
ole
pleasure.
hyvä, ole hyvä. Your insights have really, I mean, shaped by your journey from the Ritz-Carlton to all of this, truly highlight how the timeless principles of hospitality can guide our digital future, I think. And to our listeners, thank you for tuning in. If you enjoyed this conversation, don't forget to follow the AI Experience podcast and share this episode with your network. Until next time, stay curious and stay human. Thank you. Thank you for tuning into the AI Experience, from basics to breakthroughs. We hope today's conversation sparked new ideas and insights on your AI journey. If you enjoyed this episode, Don't forget to subscribe for more discussions with leading experts in AI, customer experience, and innovation. Join us next time as we continue to explore the transformative power of artificial intelligence.